to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, on Wednesdays, we always talk about outdoor, environmental kinds of things. And today, guess what? Darren Bush is back. He's the chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. And we're going to talk with him about snowshoeing and about paddling. So as we visit with Darren, I hope you'll join in. What questions you have about snowshoeing, for example? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. Darren Bush, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks to have you. Nice. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've been snowshoeing for over 40 years, and I'm sure you started on traditional snowshoes, and you're still using them, but are they hard to find, the traditional ones?
Yeah, it depends. I'd say they're hard to find commercially. I mean, you'll find them some places. The easiest way to find them probably is on like eBay or places like that, or Facebook Marketplace, or garage sales, or estate sales, or whatever. The problem is it's really hard to know what you're getting. Just like buying a used car, not everything that is there may be apparent. You know, a small crack in a frame can make the thing basically useful for hanging up over the bar, but not good for shoeing on. But then there's things that look like they're falling apart, and all it needs is a small repair, and then they're fine.
So, what are the advantages of the handmade ones?
Traditional shoes generally they have better flotation, so you have a bigger area, a wider area. Especially in softer snow, non-consolidated snow, they tend to float a little higher. The modern shoes tend to work a little bit better on places that are more like frozen and then thawed and then frozen again, where you've got that crusty stuff, because the traditional ones generally don't have that grip on the bottom, the crampon that digs into the ice. So for softer, deeper, fluffier snow, the traditionals, in my opinion, tend to work better. For consolidated snow or where there's been a freeze and a thaw, the modern shoes tend to work better.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about a pair, getting a pair, what other basic information do you need to know before choosing a pair?
How much you weigh, including what you're carrying. So, you know, you might weigh 180 pounds, but you're carrying a child in a backpack, right? So a lot of people go out with their kids, especially, you know, toddlers who, you know, they can't keep up with you snowshoeing, obviously. So you end up either pulling them in a sled or putting them in a backpack. So you have to take into account how much stuff you're carrying with you. So if, you know, I weigh 200 pounds, if I'm carrying a backpack with 20 pounds in it, I need a little bit more flotation. So you have to know that. You have to know, you know, what kind of terrain you're going to be going on. In general, the larger shoes work better, obviously. They float better. The more surface area, the better they float. But you don't want to go so big that they're getting in the way, right? So you can get a big shoe that's going to float well, but you're going to get tired because you've got to kind of work, kind of fight against it. And a good example would be like, so the general make time snowshoe, right? The big long, they call them Alaskans. They're like 12 inches wide and 60 inches long. They go very well in a straight line because they've got the area sort of distributed front and back. But like trappers and people who are used to walking around in the brush, those big long tails get in the way. So they have a shorter and a rounder shoe. And those are fine, and they work better in brush when you're trying to change directions. But it actually has a nice analogy with a canoe. A short, wide canoe is great for paddling on the Kickapoo, and a long, skinny canoe is great for paddling in, you know, bigger water. But if you try and take a long, skinny paddling canoe on the Kickapoo, you're going to have to fight the boat, you know, turn the corners and stuff. Whereas taking a short, fat boat out on a long, you know, a bigger lake, you're going to have to fight it to keep it going straight. So you have to kind of choose the right tool for what you're doing.
I've heard that snowshoe tails that sort of extend, do they help?
You know? Yeah, so the reason that they're there is they act kind of like a rudder. So when you pick your foot up, the back of the shoe should drag. It shouldn't lift up. So when you do that, especially on a longer shoe with the big tail, like an Alaskan or an Ojibwe shape, that tail is going to drag and keep the shoe pointing forward. If you're using a shorter, wider shoe without a tail, like a trapper would use, the shoe is going to kind of go where it's going to go. So you have to spend a little more tension, pay a little more attention, right, to get it to go where you want it to go. So it just depends.
I'm thinking about bindings. Talk about the different kinds of bindings that are available and maybe the pros and cons.
Okay. So for a modern shoe, generally the binding you get is the binding you get. They're integrated into the shoe. You don't attach them. They're already there. I've got a couple pairs of Atlas snowshoes that I've had for years, and the binding is actually an integrated part of the shoe. Generally, all bindings are going to provide a place where your foot goes in and it cradles the ball of your foot and over the top to kind of secure the shoe to your foot. Modern shoes, it's already integrated, and some of them have really fancy buckles and straps. Some of them have like little ratchets like they do on some of the snowboard boots
to
hold your foot in. And then on the traditionals, generally you can do anything from something very simple to something very complex. The simple ones are what originally the native people used, which was basically a piece of thong or of leather or something, and use that to strap your foot to the shoe. So what I use instead of that, because leather stretches, is I use lamp wick, which is just the stuff they put in, lamps, right, in oil lamps. And it's about an inch wide, and it's cotton, and it doesn't stretch, even when it gets wet. And so you can use that to wrap you go over the toe cord and then up over your foot and then tighten it up and then cinch it down and maybe go on your ankle or something. It just depends how you want to do it. But that holds the shoe firmly to your foot. Now, there's other kinds of bindings. There's what's called a Bob Mackie binding, and that's basically a rubber, kind of like a long donut. And you attach the front part to the toe cord of your snowshoe and then kind of slide your foot inside it and stretch the rubber. So it's quick on and off. It's kind of like slip-on shoes, which are great for putting on to go out and taking the trash out and then coming back in again. But if you're doing a long, going for a run, you don't want a slip-on shoe, right? Because they're going to move around and
get
blisters. Right, they're going to slip. That's what they're made for. So there's different ways of putting traditional shoes on. When I keep saying things like toe cord. The toe cord is the main part of a traditional shoe that goes from side to side, that is actually meant to go under the ball of your foot, not under your toes, because that's the pivot point on a snowshoe, is the ball of your foot.
That's the pivot point. And so that, does that need to be then tight?
So the toe cord going side to side, that pivot point is the strongest part of the webbing. So like the shoes that I make, I'm using one single strand for the weave, right? I use six strands going back and forth before I start to do the weave, just to make that really, really big and beefy and strong.
You mentioned footwear a couple of times. I mean, what footwear do you recommend or do you like?
It kind of depends on the situation. So I use mucklocks a lot, which it's a heavy-duty moccasin with a felt liner. It's what First Nations people would use. If you look at pictures of the natives in Greenland or in Alaska, they were wearing these, big, thick boots that were lined with, we use felt. They probably use some sort of fur. And they come up to just under your knee. And the good part about that is they're soft. They move, your feet move around in them. When your feet can move around, they stay warmer, right? You don't have any pinch points. And it keeps the snow out because they come up higher. So it's kind of like a built-in gaiter, right?
Yeah.
So you can wear those. You can wear a pair of hiking boots or Sorels. Those work fine. Gaiters are basically it's a cloth, a waterproof cloth that clips around the top of your boot and covers the top and goes up so that you don't get snow inside your hiking boots if you step into something deep by accident or snow just flops around sometimes. But if you're walking on the golf course, you know, in a path that's been well established, because there are snowshoe paths, you know, in different places, golf courses, woods, whatever, you don't really need a high boot because snow's not deep and flopping around, right? It's just there. So just a low hiking boot is fine.
So you mentioned golf courses, and some golf courses would have trails for this. But how can folks find a good snowshoeing trail in, you know, where no matter where they live in the state?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the good news is any place there's snow, any place you can walk, you know, you can snowshoe. A lot of places groom for cross country skiing, for Nordic skiing, both skate and parallel and diagonal. It's kind of bad form to walk down the middle of those. In fact, it's really bad form. But there's always along the edge, there's always a place where you can walk. And if you want to go off into the deeper stuff, just go off into the deeper stuff. I go to the dog park quite a bit with my dog. And the paths are pretty much worn down or tramped down already. So I don't really need snowshoes. But if I go to a different place that's a bigger park that doesn't get used a lot, or where there's, you know, new snow and no one's there, then I'll put on a pair of snowshoes and I'm in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, generally, if it's a hiking trail, it's usually a snowshoeing trail. But yeah, the thing to be aware of is just don't walk on the ski trails. It's rude.
I kind of like walking on the lakes. You know, I've got Lake Monona right there handy, and it's fun to walk along sort of along the shoreline there, and you can look out over the lake, or you can look back and look at your neighbor's homes or whatever.
Yeah, walking on the lake's great. I mean, it's really fun. The only stipulation or caveat I would give is there's some lakes, like Wingra, that have springs.
Yeah.
And the problem is that if it's not snow covered, it's no big deal because it'll freeze. It'll just be slightly thinner there. But if there's snow on it, then you'll get kind of an oozing that comes up through it. And you won't notice until you walk on it, and then suddenly you're walking on Slurpee. And then it freezes to your shoes, and it's like, oh, crap. And you turn around and go back to shore and knock it all off. But that happened to me a couple of times, and up north, I wasn't expecting it, but just there was really, really deep snow, and water ran between the snow and the ice.
So. Russ in Belleville, let's go to you. Hi, Russ.
Hey, Larry. Hi, Darren. I fell in love with snowshoes about 10 years ago after we had a blizzard in December and put them on and been thrown away, but I stopped using my cross-country skis, and actually I was out with two friends yesterday, and we did 5 miles and went to the top of Lone Rock at Quincy Bluff. It's an amazing state natural area that I absolutely love.
Oh, that's beautiful out there. Yeah.
Oh, Russ, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. And as you listen in, you may have an experience to share about snowshoeing, or maybe you've got a question about it. And we can even talk canoes. Canoe-copia is coming up, so we're certainly going to talk about that as well. You can join in, though, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us. The email address, ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau is our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Pleased to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Darren Bush, chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports. talking with him. We started talking about snowshoeing and still have some more to talk about in that area. But certainly, if you have questions about canoeing as well or Canoocopia, I hope you'll join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Barry in Cross Plains, thanks for joining in. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. I just wanted a couple comments on the cross-country skiing with ice and snowshoeing. If you go to Blue Mountains, you will get a ticket if you cross snowshoe on the cross-country ski trails. So you watch the rules when you go to that. And another great ice age for hiking is the Ice Age Trail all across the state. It's phenomenal.
Oh.
That's all I had to put in.
Thank you, Barry. Yeah. Would you agree there, Darren?
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing, Blue Mountains is great because they have dedicated snowshoe trails. So it's one of the few places I've seen that have them just for that. But actually, a lot of the state parks have dedicated snowshoe trails only. So yeah, stay off the trails,
yeah.
Off the groomed trails.
Or
yeah.
You might wind up with a ticket.
Yeah.
And at the worst, and or maybe at the even worst, you're going to. You're going to have a lot of people angry with you.
It's bad karma, you know. Those grooming machines cost a lot of money, and the volunteers spend a lot of time grooming. So, yeah, walking down the middle of those is bad form, yeah.
Gus, who's up north, let's go there. Hi, Gus.
Yeah, hi. Comment goes pretty much along with what you're saying right now. I would say stay off any trail. Great thing with snowshoeing is you can go anywhere you want. So old woods roads, old logging roads are great. If the woods doesn't have a lot of brush in it, you can go just wander right through the woods. And you can't get lost because you can just turn around and follow your own tracks right back out.
Is that a challenge? I mean, unless you're running into someone else's tracks, too. Yeah, no, he's right. You can pretty much go anywhere. The one thing that I've talked to some wildlife biologists about this, and they don't think it's great to walk across some prairies. And it's because the small rodents live in the space between the ground and the top of the snow in that grass there. And it's pretty important to them for surviving the winter. And when you walk over that, you compress that down a little bit. And could make it not habitable. So, I mean, I'm not saying you should never walk on a prairie, but it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, a good point. Gus, thanks again. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. And, you know, one of the joys, I think, of snowshoeing is that if you kind of know how to walk,
right,
you can snowshoe. And the very first time you put them on.
Right. If you can walk, you can snowshoe. And the other thing is it's excellent low-impact exercise. And I love skiing. I mean, it's great.
Yeah.
But if I'm going out to take pictures, I don't ski. Because if I want to stop and take a picture, I don't have to worry about what I do with my poles. And am I going to slide forward as soon as I pick my camera up to put it to my face? So I've just preferred switching to that when I want to go a little bit slower and see what's going on around me. But I've had people, you know, I have friends in their 80s that snowshoe, and they take along a couple of poles just for balance, and they can go and get a very, very good low-impact workout. You have 2 or 3 pounds of shoes on your feet, which doesn't hurt, right? And that gives you a little bit more resistance. So it's a great exercise for anybody.
I would agree with that. Mark emailed and he wonders, where can he get a pair of traditional snowshoes re-webbed?
I get this question a lot. I have repaired shoes before. Sometimes it is basically you're better off not doing it. But it depends on the frames, so and it depends on the webbing. I mean, there's so many things it depends on. I mean, I'm happy to have them take a picture of them and send it to me, and I'll take a look at them because I can do small repairs. If you're going to reweave the whole thing, unless it's for nostalgic purposes, like these were my great-grandpa's and I want to keep them, it's sometimes not worth it.
Yeah, but that
Yeah, I get between $300 and $400 for a brand new pair, and that's about what it takes to get that, you know, that level of intricacy. Mine are a lot more intricate than some. The standard ones you buy don't have as tight of a weave and such, but they're out there. The people out there that do it. It's just, you kind of have to know someone that knows somebody. So I'm happy to start them down that path.
Yeah, that's great. Just talk a bit more about your joy and your work making snowshoes. You've been doing it for so long.
Yeah, I just finished pair 95. Because I have a little pyrography set, a little wood burner set that I can write. It has a little, like a 0.8 millimeter ball, which is kind of like a ballpoint.
Yeah.
So if you can do it with a ballpoint pen, you can do it with this. So I put designs on the toes of mine just for fun, different design each time. And sometimes it's rabbit tracks, sometimes it's snowflakes, sometimes it's just a tree or whatever. And then I sign them. Just so I can keep track of which ones I make. But the last two pairs I made went to a wonderful couple down in Illinois, and she had not been able to snowshoe because the small snowshoes she had that were modern ones didn't provide enough flotation. And now she's out and running around and is just delighted. So that made me happy. So yeah, it's pair 95, and I don't have any reason to stop. I mean, it's, my wife jokes that this is kind of like, you know, lose $12 in every pair and make it up in volume. it's like the amount of time I spend. But it's just something I love to do. So I'll sit in front of the TV when I'm watching curling. And because you don't have to watch curling, right? It kind of unfolds, you know. You can't do that with hockey, but curling you can do that. So I'm just lacing away and, you know, enjoying the time, and gives me something to do. It exercises my brain, and just it's fun. And I also just got six pair of frames from a guy up in Tomahawk who bought an old camp. Scout camp, I think, or something like that, and found this shed with these six snowshoe frames in there, covered with cobwebs and dust and dirt. And he said, do you want them? I said, sure, I'll pay a couple hundred bucks for them. And they're old, but they've never been used. And so, you know, you get the wire brush and you get the sandpaper and you clean them all up, and they're really cool. And I built a pair off the first one that came out, and they turned out beautifully. And I'm like, so I recycled something that was, you know, 40 years old and made a brand new pair out of them. And I left some of the dust and, you know, some of the love. So after they varnished, they looked like they're 40 years old. So.
Oh, that is so, so cool. Rand, and by the way, do you make those? You just tend to make one, or you, it sounded like the Illinois couple, you might have made those on spec, but
I just make them. And then, yeah. Then when you got a pair, I'm like, I happen to have a pair. The folks in Illinois, I only had one pair, and he's waiting for another one the next time I make them.
There you go.
So it'll probably be in the spring or fall or whatever, but yeah, if I turned it into a business, I would hate it. I've already got one of those. I don't need another one.
Understood. Well, Randy in Green Bay, we'll give you an opportunity now. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the show. I was listening into your comments about snowshoeing, and I'm typically a cross-country skier for years. But I also enjoy winter camping, and I can't get all access to the locations I like to go to with cross-country skis. So snowshoes provide that opportunity. I just returned from a trip up in Lincoln County. Had a great weekend of camping, and to get access to that, I had to snowshoe in. And it was deep enough snow where we camped that we had to use the snowshoes to tromp down the area so we could actually set up a tent.
Ah.
Anyway, thought I'd share that.
Oh, thanks, Randy.
Yeah, it's a good point, because usually people who are tenting, camping like that are pulling a sled or a toboggan or something behind them. And you can do that on skis, but sometimes the sled wants to go faster than you. And it's a little easier to control it when you're on snowshoes. And, yeah, and when you get in there, you need to walk in circles for 15 minutes to tramp down the snow enough to put up a tent. Yeah, cool.
Thank you again. You know, before time gets completely away from us, I also wanted to talk about Canucopia with you and canoes and kayaks and so forth. Canucopia is set for March 11th through the 13th this year.
Yep.
In person, but some things are going to be virtual. Talk about it.
Well, you know, we had to cancel it in 2020 due to COVID, you know, the day before it was to open. So that was a kick in the teeth. And we thought, well, we should be okay by next year. Well, as we got into, you know, September, I'm thinking, you know, we have to plan this thing out a year. And I said, there's no way this is going to be ready, so let's try it virtually. Let's see what happens. So we did a virtual one where all the speakers and presentations were done virtually, and it turned out really well, and people really enjoyed it. And I had a comment from a gentleman down in Arkansas who used to drive up every year to the show, and he said, you know, I'm 80-something years old now. I really don't feel comfortable driving in Wisconsin in March, you know, because you never know what's going to happen with the weather. And so I totally get it. And he said, thanks for doing this virtually, because now I can continue to attend even though I can't come. And I thought, you know, there's probably a lot of people like that. So I'm going to do both. So, well, we're going to do both. I don't do anything. we have a team. And so we're going to do both. So this year we're doing both. We're having an in-person. And we made some pretty significant changes. All the aisles are now going to be 15 feet wide, just to, you know, give people a little more room to move around and make people a little more comfortable. And so by doing that, and then by going virtually, it'll allow people, if they can't get into a room to see a speaker because it's crowded, because we're taking some of the chairs out of the speaker rooms too. We just want to, you know, give some breathing room, give some space. They can turn it online and watch it there and watch it for 3 months after the show. And that's the cool part. And last year I actually got to watch presentations for the first time in 30 years. And I'm like, and these are all my friends giving these great presentations. I'm like, I finally get to see them. Right. So it was really cool. So yeah, we're doing a combination virtual and live, and it's more work but that's okay, because we've got really great staff. So.
Well, and I think if people type in Canucopia or Rutabaga Paddle Sports, everything's going to pop up.
Yeah, there'll be a button somewhere, but yeah, it's that's out of my department. I've got really good web people that handle all that stuff.
Well, let's get back to the phones. Doug in Mount Horeb. Thanks for calling.
Great program. You've heard this recommendation before a couple weeks ago on your program, but if you want a place to go snowshoeing that's private, quiet, you won't see another person, it's in Dane County. It's the Hauge Historic District Park, H-A-U-G-E, Hauge Historic District Park. It's at 1399 County Trunk C. 1399 County Trunk C, and you can download a brochure with the snowshoeing trails showing on them at HaugeHistoricDistrictPark.org. The trails go all over the park. There's a parking area that's plowed, and it's open sunrise to sunset 7 days a week, and it has the second highest public park observation point in Dane County. It's second only to Blue Mountains. So if you want to get lost in the boonies and snowshoe by yourself but still have a nice experience, that's the place to go.
Doug, thank you.
That sounds great. Thank you.
Hauge Historic District Park, and we did talk about that did come up on the show a couple of weeks ago. Doug, thanks for that reminder. Appreciate it very much. And there's good opportunities there. Teddy in Barnes, we'll go to you. Thanks for calling, Teddy.
Hey, Larry. You got to get your butt up here and cut some northerns on the middle of Eau Claire. But to go to snowshoeing, we went way back in on the Ounce River and off of 27, and I had an old pair of snowshoes that my friend's dad made when we were in high school in Rhinelander, Joe Jurowski. and the other three guys had those fancy aluminum ones, and I was just cruising on top of the snow, and they kept sinking and sinking and sinking, and I was just laughing, thinking how old school was just kicking new school's butt. So,
yep. That's my only comment. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, Teddy, thanks for calling. I spent a lot of time around the Ounce River and in that area, and appreciate hearing that name again. That was great. Claire in Sauk County, your turn. Hi, Claire.
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for taking my call, because I want to thank Darren at Devil's Lake last summer. I'm pretty sure he's going to remember this. I and a friend had a little incident involving inflatable swans. Mine got away from me, and Darren came out in his beautiful sea kayak and hauled me back to shore with my swan, and I want to thank him publicly.
Oh, boy. I am having recollections. Yeah. Well, you're welcome. Anybody loses a swan, I'm there for you.
Thanks, Claire. Oh, that's a good story. You probably have a bunch of those.
I've pulled a few powerboats. That's my favorite one, is when I'm sitting there and I paddle up and I'll see a boat floating down the river with a rope hanging off the front and a guy standing at the ramp looking very, very bemused. And I'm like, I got it. And tie it on my boat and pull it over. It's, you know, it's no big deal. But yeah, there's no problem with that. They slow down when they go past me and wave, and I pull their boats back to the ramp when they lose the rope. So it's all good.
Those are great, great stories.
I had forgotten about the swan.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, yeah, I've got, you know, if you spend enough time in the outdoors, come up with a lot, or you experience a lot of things that become memories that you, well, except for the swans, maybe, that you keep in your mind for probably forever.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, it's really fun to be, I mean, I was up paddling in October 2 years ago, I think it was, on this lake. There was nobody else there. Literally nobody else there, right? And I come up to get out, and there's a guy parked there about to unload a canoe, and he's like, oh, hey, Darren. Hey, how's it going? It's like, and then I go to the campground, and I'm camping, and the guy drives by. He's like, hey, Darren. I'm like, like you'd think I was famous or something. But it just makes me laugh.
You know, all these years you've been, you know, over your career and at Rutabaga, what do you think have been the biggest changes when it comes to the kinds of things that you're involved in, been involved in sales and helping others in the area? It's a big question, I guess.
That's a really interesting question. You know, people don't change that much. And that's really what the best part about my job is the people. I mean, they're all wonderful. You know, I have people who come into my shop are coming in there because they love the outdoors or they want to. And, you know, occasional cranky person comes in and, you know, has whatever their problem is. But that's it's not us. It's them. It's something else, right? But I've had people tell me I've changed their lives, you know. And I've had, you know, I had a... This really quick story. A couple come in to the shop and say, do you remember us? I'm like, I don't think I do. And he sold us our first kayaks in 1994.
Oh, boy.
And I said, we've been paddling all over the world. We've been to Vietnam. We've been to the Yukon. We've been to Mexico. We've been to Greece. It's like, and you started this. And they just hugged me, and I'm like, okay, my life is perfect, you know. I've changed people's lives one at a time, and there's nothing better than that.
Yeah, it's a great way to feel to feel like you've made a difference. And what's the old story about if you find something you love, you never have to work a day in your life?
Yeah, that's not true. whoever said that never owned a business. It's work, but yeah. I actually like to call it labor, not work. Because like, you know, work is like you'd have to do something, but, you know, I don't have the direct experience of having a child, but, you know, my wife has. And they call it labor for a reason, right? It's hard, but you get something really good at the end. So
yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Have you ever spent any time at the Hakmatak National Wildlife Refuge?
I have no idea what that is and where it is. Please tell me.
Well, I tell you what, you got to stay listening then, because
is that next?
Yeah, it's coming up next. We're going to talk about it in Wisconsin and Illinois, both. It goes over state lines, and we're going to talk about that next. Darren, it's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Larry. It's always a pleasure, and thank you to all the listeners and people who call in. I learned so much from you guys.
Appreciate it very much. And Canucopia again, March 11th through the 13th, and you can go online and find out all about it. I think we have a link even on our Larry Mueller Show site for today's program. Darren, thank you. Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, our guest. And he didn't know about the Hakmatak National Wildlife Refuge. Do you know anything about it? It's a pretty cool thing, and we've got three people to talk about it. Next on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.